This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Many people will use the lock and dam system on the Mississippi River this summer, from barges carrying agricultural exports to recreational boaters taking a day trip upriver. But this iconic infrastructure system isn't the only place dams are found in the region, with inland dams scattered throughout much of southwestern Wisconsin. Today is the sixth show in our monthly series on regional infrastructure systems. Joining us to talk about the state of dams and other river infrastructure in the Coulee region are Meg Galloway, Chief of Dam Safety and Floodplain Section of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Kirsten Mickelson, Ecosystem and Navigation Program Director for the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association. And Kirsten, I just want to start by having you kind of explain, you know, what the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association is.
We represent the governors of the five states that border the Upper Mississippi River, including Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, and Missouri. They all have common goals in terms of managing the Upper Mississippi River, and so we help to facilitate their management of the river, as well as advocate on their behalf to Congress and the federal administration to increase resources to the river and work towards policies that would benefit the region.
Yeah, and what are some of the, you know, major issues that your association is paying attention to?
One is the Trump administration's look towards infrastructure investment, and we are hopeful that the locks and dams on the Mississippi River will be included in that package. And so we're working with members of Congress, including Wisconsin's delegation, to think through how the locks and dams might be incorporated into that package. We are also supportive of managing the river in an integrated approach, and that includes, improving the ecosystem health and water quality. And so we are also involved in the Army Corps of Engineers Upper Mississippi River Restoration Program, and then the state looks at water quality monitoring and nutrient reduction strategies.
And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers obviously does a lot of management of the lock and dam system, but Meg, I wonder, you know, how the DNR is kind of involved, or, what kind of role they play in the lock and dam system on the Mississippi?
Well, as Kristen stated, we are a partner with the other states in the Upper River Mississippi River Basin Association, and those are primarily the interest in management, and as Kristen said, water quality, nutrient reduction, things like that. We also have some regulatory authority along and adjacent to the Mississippi River, primarily in some zoning standards and regulation of habitat and species.
And I definitely want to talk about water quality on the Mississippi and how locks and dams kind of play into that later. But, you know, first, you know, most of these locks and dams on the river are over 70 years old at this point. And, you know, Kristen, what is the state of the current system? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what these locks and dams kind of look like?
These locks and dams were built in the 1930s, as you suggested, and they are definitely aged. The locks and dams in the Wisconsin area, they benefit from the river being closed during the winter, and so the Corps can dewater those locks and do major rehabilitation. And so those locks are really designed for, what was occurring back in the 1930s with traffic. And, you know, traffic has rebounded, and so the locks are smaller than what modern tow sizes carry in terms of barges. But also, they're beyond their 50-year design life, and that's what they were designed for. The Corps has been doing a good job in terms of keeping those updated to the best of their ability in the St. Paul District, and the association works on the state's behalf to make sure that the funding is here for that rehabilitation and maintenance work. But as you get down to the southern area where Wisconsin's product, you know, moves down the Mississippi River, so through all of those locks, and so each one is really important to the state. And in the lower end, those locks are obviously have more traffic associated with it and are, I guess, in a worse condition. Overall, on the Upper Mississippi River, the American Society of Civil Engineers graded the locks and dams at a D, and that's certainly the case. You'll see that closures, whether they're scheduled or unscheduled for needed repairs, are escalating, increasing the cost of those goods associated within those barges. And then they're undersized, so the tows aren't, they need to break apart, and that adds on to the time and under the cost that are borne by the producers and consumers in Wisconsin.
I just want to return to something that you mentioned, Kirsten. I believe you said the design life of these locks and dams was 50 years, right? You know, what does that mean for what these systems need? Is this a situation where, you know, we need some major overhaul of these lock and dam systems?
Yeah, we certainly do. And the program that's called the Navigation Ecosystem Sustainability Program has been strongly supported by the governors of the five states and by commodity groups and manufacturer groups and environmental groups. And that includes a package of seven locks to modernize. And on the Mississippi River, that's five of the most southern locks in the system, or at least locks 20 through 25, to modernize that. And what that would mean is the construction of a second chamber that is double the size of the current lock that would be there, but that's the size that could carry the modern size of a tow. And that would greatly increase the efficiency, reduce cost of that transportation, and to the benefit, really, of the most inland states of Wisconsin and Minnesota, where that, you know, traffic has to go the farthest. So that's where we're really looking to overhaul those locks right now, you know, without a greater footprint.
And I know that another issue is that it's becoming more costly to operate the system as it ages. Right now it costs, you know, up to $200 million annually to operate these lock and dam systems. And, you know, are we doing, in your opinion, Kirsten, are we doing enough, to look at these costs and kind of update things to maybe reduce operating costs?
Well, no, that's exactly the case, and that is something that we're doing. In particular, in Wisconsin, that might include channel maintenance. So right now with watershed pressures and pressures within the floodplain, what we're seeing is that there's increased flooding on an annual basis, and then situations where we might, like we had this year, where we get some flooding and then a dry period where then the sediment will drop out. And so those two things affect the channel and the Corps' ability to manage that channel well. And so one thing that the states really have been pushing for is for the Corps to take a step back and think about how it might more strategically approach channel maintenance in the long term, given that maybe the watershed has changed over the past 50 years and that plans before are maybe outdated. So how might we look at the way that weather is changing or costs are changing and start to really think about how we lower the cost and keep the channel open and safe and reliable and maintain the locks in the same kind of way?
That's Kirsten Mickelson from the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association here with us today for the sixth show in our monthly series on infrastructure. Also joining us is Meg Galloway from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. So we'll definitely return to talking about dams on the Mississippi, but I want to, you know, pivot for a moment and maybe talk about dams found elsewhere throughout our region. And, you know, it's kind of obvious what locks and dams are used for in the Mississippi for navigation. But, you know, Meg, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, what are the purpose of dams found along other waterways in the state?
The first dams in the state were built primarily to support milling and timber production. And then as time went on, a lot of municipalities built dams to help with again, power and for recreation in their communities. So a lot of the dams across the state are associated primarily with recreation. A lot are also there for power generation, and particularly in the western part of the state, a lot of the dams are there for agricultural purposes, primarily flood protection to control flooding as it comes off the steep coulee region, and sediment control to control the sediment that gets washed off of the farmland.
How many dams are in the state of Wisconsin? Do we have a kind of a total number?
In our dam inventory, we have about 3,900 dams. Some of those are dams that really are not regulated by any entity, either because they're not on a water course and the state dam safety laws apply to only to dams on water courses. And then the others would be about 80 cranberry dams in the state that are associated with the cranberry industry, and they have a specific exemption to the dam safety statutes.
And do we have an estimate for maybe how many of those 3,900 dams are in the western part of the state, the southwestern part?
Well, I looked at the 10 counties sort of from La Crosse to Juneau, Lafayette, Grant County, so all the counties in that area. And there's about 940 dams in that area. That's one of the more densely populated dam areas in the state.
Do we have an estimate of maybe how many of the dams in that region, or just, you know, of the dams in the state, are in need of repair? You know, what's kind of the current situation with those dams?
Some of the dams in the state were built back in the 1840s to 1890s. Now, many of those dams have changed significantly over the years, but we're talking about some very old infrastructure. The age of hydropower from about 1900 into the 1950s built a lot of the dams on the major waterways in the state, and also a lot of the dams in the municipalities of the state. So it's a very old infrastructure. It's also sort of a forgotten infrastructure in that many people who live on lakes don't even realize the lake is there primarily because of the dam. Having said that, most of the dam owners have tried to keep them up over the years. Some of the dams have been totally reconstructed. So I can't give you an exact number at that time. I know this summer we probably have about 20 to 25 major repair reconstruction projects going on dams around the state.
Yeah, and you mentioned, the dam owners, and I as kind of a plural thing, and I wonder if you could talk about kind of, you know, who is responsible for the dams in the state? And I know the DNR does monitoring, but, you know, who is ultimately responsible for the upkeep?
Well, ultimately, the dam owner is responsible for the safe operation maintenance of their dams. So it comes down to, ultimately, to the dam owner. One thing that was statistic that's fairly interesting is over half of the dams in the state are owned by private entities or corporations. About another 30% are owned by municipalities. There's a large number of dams that are associated with the hydro industry that aren't regulated by the state, but they're regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And then DNR is actually the largest dam owner in the state. We own quite a few dams associated with fish hatcheries, our wildlife areas, and our state forest areas, and our state parks and state forests.
That's really interesting that a lot of the dams are owned, as you said, by, you know, private owners, private companies. I wonder if you can give some examples of what kind of companies might own a dam.
A number of the dams are owned by paper companies, and then the private utilities associated with the hydro industry.
How does that maybe complicate the way that these dams are, the maintenance that happens on these dams? Is it, I guess, more difficult if everyone is kind of managing their own to have, consistent maintenance?
Consistent maintenance, that's a hard one. Since every dam owner is responsible for maintenance, it's really left up to them. Some dam owners either have more resources, or in the case of municipalities, they have taxing authority, whereas a private individual really has to dig into their own resources. And so I think it's probably hardest on the private individuals who have dams on their property primarily for agricultural recreational purposes.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what's involved in the kind of maintenance and future planning of a dam. You know, what kind of factors are considered, and, you know, is there an inspection process, I wonder, for these dams?
For the dams that we consider large hazard, large dams, and that would be a dam that's over 6 feet in height and impounds more than 50 acre-feet of water, or, as very often happens in the western part of the state, is over 25 feet and impounds 15 acre-feet of water, which isn't a real large amount of water, but it's sort of, this sizing is a federal standard that's based on the potential energy of the water behind the dam, and if it were to fail, the fact that it could do significant impact to things immediately downstream of the dam. So we have, in the state, we have about 1,100 large dams, which the state regulates, and or 1,100 dams, the state regulates about 900 of those. And in that case, there are mandatory inspections. All large dams in the state are inspected based on the hazard they create. And hazard, a lot of people would think that is related to the condition of the dam, and it's actually related more to the consequences of failure of the dam. And so a high-hazard dam, if it fails, there's a high probability for loss of life. A significant hazard dam, is not there's not expected to be loss of life, but there could be significant damage to areas downstream. And then a low-hazard dam, you would not expect significant damage or loss of life. High-hazard dams in the state have to be inspected every 2 years. The significant dams are on a cycle of inspection every 3 to 4 years, and then low-hazard dams once every 10 years. Those inspections are the responsibility of the owner to hire a professional engineer that's familiar with dams to come out and do the inspection. The state also inspects the high and significant hazard dams once every 10 years.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of dams and locks in our region. We are here with Meg Galloway from the Wisconsin DNR and Kirsten Mickelson from the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association based in St. Paul, Minnesota. And so, you know, we're talking about kind of the state of a lot of these, you know, dams and other infrastructure along rivers in our state. You know, and Meg, you mentioned that there's around 25, you know, projects you're working on this summer. You know, how much do these projects typically cost? You know, what is the, I guess, the funding needed for these a lot of these projects?
It certainly varies across the board based on the type of initial construction, the problems that have been identified, and the size of the dam. We have a grant program for municipal grants, municipally owned dams, and I would say the average project cost for those dams are in the $250,000 to $400,000 range. Though we have projects in the state that have gone well over $1 million, and a couple that have gone up into the $8 to $10 million range.
And Kirsten, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, the funding that is needed to do a lot of the maintenance or a lot of the updates to the lock and dam systems on the Mississippi.
You know, for the whole Upper Mississippi River system, there's a over $100 billion backlog of operations and maintenance. Typically, the St. Paul District will get its maintenance funding in a pocket. And it seems like that funding has grown over the years, and I think that that's a product of the association's advocacy efforts and just the recognition that costs are going up on the Upper Mississippi River. You know, for the specific needs every year, I think that changes. And so I guess I don't want to provide a specific look at it. We'll see what happens with the channel maintenance issues happening right now and what that might mean for the cost in a couple of years to recover from that. But I know that the Corps puts forward a budget every year for all of its locks and dams in a complete package and thinks through what it needs that particular year.
Earlier in the show, you mentioned the navigation and ecosystem sustainability program, which was something that was passed by Congress in I believe the early 2000s, but I know has been kind of a contentious issue because it hasn't received federal funding at this point. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what the situation is there and how maybe that's impacting kind of the needed updates on the lock and dam system.
That program has received appropriations through congressional earmarks. It's received, I think, about $60 million so far in planning, but no funding for construction yet. And part of that reason is that the Corps took a look at the locks. And so, like we talked about before, there's a 50-year design line. And with that, then the Corps needs to estimate traffic and the cost of that traffic over 50 years so it can do a cost-benefit analysis. Well, there's a lot of uncertainty with traffic over a 50-year lifespan. I mean, we saw that certainly with the oil coming out of North Dakota, for example, and the impact that that had on agriculture and using rail and the waterways. And so that 50-year projection is hard. It also didn't include the expansion of the Panama Canal or, other things like that. And so that the Corps was very honest with the Office of Management and Budget that a 50-year projection is uncertain and the models need to be updated. And OMB made the decision that it didn't have the information it needed to do a cost or to decide on that new start. And so because of that, it hasn't been in the president's budget. Now, the Army Corps of Engineers, when it forwarded its request, it said that the risks of not moving forward with the navigation infrastructure investment is greater than the associated cost. However, the administration, spanning presidents from Bush to Clinton, and to now President Trump, have said that that those risks are too much. And so they haven't put the program in the budget. And so we've relied on congressional earmarks. And when that ban went into place, the program stopped receiving federal investment.
Can you talk a little bit more about why there's a lot of uncertainty about kind of what traffic will look like on the river and maybe what we've seen, trends in traffic on the river we've seen over the last, 5 or 10 years or so?
I think that the trends have been, for the last 5 years, have been probably pretty stable. Last year was a higher traffic year, but it really depends on agricultural production, whether or not farmers are going to hold their supply given price demand. So for crop production itself, there's how much acreage is planted, what's the yield, the role of ethanol, stock holdings, all that kind of stuff. Also energy. That market is volatile, and we're not sure what gas prices might be or where other energy efficiency might come in or alternative supplies. What happens with subsidies, tariffs, or taxes, or trade agreements like with Cuba? How might that impact, or with China and the what we saw in the TPP? Or rates of rail and that availability, or of trucking? Looking down the road, just all of those variables within themselves and then together create a challenge for forecasting future scenarios in a 50-year time frame.
And so what do we need to do to, to start making plans for the future? You know, I guess, what are the next steps?
You know, we have a lot of in our hands about the value of that system. And so one thing that we have recently, the USDA did a study about, just say, for example, that Lock and Dam 25 closed and what that would mean. And it found that it's a substantial risk just for 1 year alone. Just one season, if that had an emergency closure, that would impact Midwest farmers incredibly. And so we see that the risk of not moving forward with investment outweighs what the cost is. Just by that, you know, just looking at the agricultural industry alone. And I think, too, when we look at congestion on roads and rails, and we look forward to what container shipping might look like and trade, we know that the current infrastructure is not enough. And so we have those plans in place with the Navigation Ecosystem Sustainability Program. That was a really well-thought-out plan that also involves environmental stewardship and ecosystem restoration that can handle the watershed stressors. And so we have that in place. We just need Congress to include NEST in its budget and fund it, and fund the work, and fund operations and maintenance appropriately, so that we can have a safe, reliable, open transportation system that is capable of handling what may come our way, and stimulate that growth and opportunity that we're not even sure exists right now, but we know it may come if it's built.
Kirsten Mickelson from the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association is here with us today to talk about the current state of locks and dams on the Mississippi and inland waterways. She's joined by Meg Galloway from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on river infrastructure. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on infrastructure systems in our region. The Driftless area is known for its many rivers, and with those waterways come dams, both throughout the state and on the Mississippi River for navigation. Joining us to talk about the current state of these important infrastructure systems and what we need to maintain them for the future are Meg Galloway, Chief of Dam Safety and Floodplain Section of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Kirsten Mickelson, Ecosystem and Navigation Program Director for the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association. And, you know, Meg, I want to start this half by kind of having you talk about an example of some dam issues that are pretty close to home for people here. I know that Vernon County has about 22 dams in their county, and, you know, they've definitely been impacted by some major flooding events in recent years. I wonder if you can talk about kind of what's been happening in Vernon County.
Certainly. Actually, Vernon County has about 109 dams in the county. 22 of them are what we call PL-566 dams. And these are dams that were built between 1950 and 1970 to really support the agriculture industry by controlling floods and also doing sediment control to keep the basically to keep the sediment on the farm fields rather than in the rivers. And so in the Driftless area, dams tend to get very large, and these 22 dams that Vernon County owns that were built under the PL-566 program are very large. Quite a number of them are high hazard, meaning if they failed, they could impact things downstream. Vernon County has, in my 26 years of experience with the state dam safety program, Vernon County has always had a very strong dam safety program and tried very hard to keep on top of the maintenance issues associated with their dam. In 2007, if a lot of people might recall, we had some very significant flooding in the southern part of the state, and there were a number of storms that seemed to come into the state in Vernon County and then track their way across the southern part of the state. Vernon County's dams were hit pretty hard in that event. While none of them actually failed, as in the dam broke and sent a lot of water downstream, many of them were significantly damaged in that event. Then, and in some of the cases, this was in August of 2007, in some of the cases, some emergency stabilization was done to the damaged dam so that they would be ready. And that was good because a similar event happened in June of 2008. And again, that hit Vernon County very hard. So they really have been working very hard over the last 10 years to address the issues at the dam. And some of the projects that I talked about being over $1 million were the dams in Vernon County that they have worked to rehabilitate.
You know, you mentioned, they've had a good, dam safety program in the past, but I wonder if, these issues that they had in, 2007, 2008, is this a result of just kind of aging infrastructure, or is this just kind of one of those unexpectedly bad storms that just, happened at one incident, I guess?
It's a combination of several factors. These were very, very significant storms that set the flood of record on many streams across the southern third of the state. So there definitely is that factor. The dams in Vernon County were built primarily into these coulees that the sides of the coulees are based in a rock formation, a sandstone formation. And these dams have been there for 50, 60 years, and what we're finding is the pressure of the impounded water against these sandstone formations really has caused the sandstone to erode, and several of the dams that were damaged were damaged because of the pressure, and while the embankment structure, the dam itself, wasn't damaged, there was significant seepage coming through the sandstone around it. Many of these dams have done, Vernon County has done grouting operations, and that's injecting a cement slurry mixture to fill these voids that have developed in the sandstone. And then sometimes it's just bad luck. One of the dams that was significantly damaged, there were hay bales in a farmer's field upstream, and the floodwater came up enough to wash those hay bales downstream into the impoundment, and a number of them lodged in the primary spillway that lets water out of the dam, and the what we call the auxiliary spillway, which is a large grassed area that's built lower than the embankment to provide ultimate relief from large storms. That started to flow, and some of the hay bales landed in that area, which caused scour and erosion down into the sandstone formation it was founded on. So that no one could have predicted, but it happened.
I wonder if we see some of the issues that we're seeing in Vernon County, if you're seeing those in other areas of the state as well.
The kind of issues they have with their rock formation Have happened in other areas of the state, though not in as high of concentration, simply because of the number of large dams that Vernon County has built in that area. When we look at the 2007-2008 events, there were some dams that totally failed. There were quite a few dams that probably about 50, 60 in the 2008 event that we were watching, because there was some portion of the dam that we were concerned about the stability and whether it would survive the flooding events. I would say there has been a concerted effort. The department certainly has done a concerted effort over the 26 years I've been with the department of working with dam owners, trying to identify deficiencies in the dam and getting those under control. I think one a note of success for the program has been some of the flooding that occurred in northern Wisconsin and northwestern Wisconsin last year, in that there was some very significant flooding, a lot of road damage, but in those events that happened in July, August, and September, there was only one dam failure, and that was not a dam that the state regulated.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of dams in our region. We're here with Meg Galloway from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources in Madison and Kirsten Mickelson from the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association in St. Paul. You know, Meg, we're talking about Vernon County and the way it's been impacted by some severe weather that took place in the, 2007-2008 timeframe. And I wonder if, looking at the impacts of severe weather on the state's dams, if that's becoming more of an issue, if that's something that you guys are paying attention to.
It definitely is. A lot of the dam upgrades that are done specifically to improve their ability to handle large rain events. As if you earlier I said that many of these dams were built in the 1800s or 1900 to 1950, and they were designed under different conditions, and with the increasing extreme events, we have been working quite hard to where we don't think a dam has adequate capacity to meet the current design standards to get the owners to upgrade them.
Kirsten, I wonder if there are concerns about how severe weather could impact the lock and dam system on the Mississippi River as well.
When we have flood events like what happened even this year, for those who are following it in the St. Louis area, there are incidences where it might impact the lock structure or the dam structure and impede the navigation channel, or scour it or create some erosion that impacts navigation. That certainly happens, and the more we see it on a year-to-year basis, the harder it is to keep up with repairing those pieces, so to keep the integrity of the river for safety.
You mentioned erosion, and I think that brings us to another issue that I want to talk about, is just kind of the impact of locks and dam systems on the ecosystem of the river and the water quality of the river. I wonder if you can talk about, kind of what are the concerns and the issues there, Kirsten?
The impact of the hydrology is fundamentally important to ecosystem quality. And the overlying health and resilience of the system. And what we're learning more and more as we go, and the La Crosse area is fortunate that there's through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Upper Mississippi River Restoration Program that we talked about before, that's really a partnership effort that involves the U.S. Geological Survey and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the five states that border the river, including Wisconsin. And Wisconsin has a field station located in La Crosse, and it monitors Pool 8. And so we're able to understand more and more, as the data now is over 30 years, what has been trending with water quality and how water quality relates to water levels, flooding events, things like that. And we're also learning about how we can operate those pool levels with, given the locks, and how we might do that if we could bring down the water level, just a little bit, what that might mean for sediment settling in the fringe areas and exposing those fringe areas to allow vegetation to increase. And that really improves the water quality. In addition, the way that the federal government and the state and our public, together with nonprofit organizations, have managed the river is we've focused on an integrated, balanced approach. And so we have programs like the Upper Mississippi River Restoration or the Navigation and Ecosystem Sustainability Program that have recreated islands maybe where they were before, or think about backwater habitat restoration and those kinds of places that are really important for nutrient sequestration or various water quality processes that keep that water clean. And so so it's important that when we're thinking about navigation on the river and the lock and dam system, that we're also thinking about ecosystem health and the integrity of that system. And like I said, we're learning more about that. And I think, going forward, we will continue to strive for optimizing those water levels for both ecosystem health, water quality, and for the safety and reliability of the 9-foot navigation channel.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up dredging, because I know that is definitely an issue on the river that is important for maintaining the navigation channel, but is recently kind of caused some stir in this region. I know that the Army Corps of Engineers is looking for new sites to kind of store these dredge materials, specifically in Pool 4 along Buffalo County. I wonder if, Kirsten, if you can just talk about, is this an issue that we're seeing in other areas, not just in Pool 4, of maybe needing to find new sites for dredge materials?
Yeah, it certainly is. I think we have capacity constraints more so in certain areas like Pool 4 than in other areas. But that's one thing that we had talked about before. The states are jointly, going through discussions with the Corps now and other partners to think through channel maintenance. And part of channel maintenance is that what we do with the sediment after we remove it from the navigation channel, might put it on those temporary sites, and then offload it, and thinking through those costs and how we do that strategically. And that's certainly an issue as you go along the entire river system, and really important for the states to be thinking about. Sometimes, as these flood events come, where then they turn into more low water conditions like we're seeing this year and sediment drops out, we want to enhance our predictive capabilities so we might know better when that's going to happen or where those hot spots are and think through a little bit better about how we handle that in a cost-effective, environmentally way or even how we use that material for other beneficial ways, whether it's road projects and reducing costs there or building islands that have ecological benefits. And so we're starting to enter through a planning process where we look long-term and strategically.
We've been talking about kind of the impact of these, lock and dams and navigation on the ecosystem and water quality of the river. I wonder, Kirsten, we talked earlier about how there is an effort, a push to maybe expand some of these lock and dam structures in the river to allow for easier navigation. I wonder how that could impact the ecosystem and how you guys are kind of thinking about that.
For one, a more efficient navigation system is beneficial in that if there are, say, tows with barges that are waiting for those locks, they have to be placed in an area along the shoreline. And the more that they maybe are idle there, greenhouse gases might be emitted, or they maybe disturb the river habitat. So the more that we can create a system where there's not that waiting period for that, the better off we are environmentally. And then as we think about water level management and those kinds of things, you know, we think about that in an integrated way, I guess. We always try to think about how changes in the navigation system or the way that it's operated affect the ecosystem, or how ecosystem projects like islands might trap sediment or, you know, place it there, and so then it's not going into the system, things like that.
Kirsten, you know, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge moving forward for these lock and dam systems on the river?
You know, in terms of the lock and dam infrastructure itself, you know, we need to spend money on the system, and the Upper Mississippi River system, when you compare with other regions in the country, like the Ohio River, haven't had the investment that's been needed. And we're advocating for that investment to occur. But, you know, you can only putt-putt along so far on outdated infrastructure. And if there's a catastrophe that happens or emergency dredging that happens, that oftentimes the environment may not be taken care of as well as we want it to. And so the more that we can provide that forethought and planning and invest in our system in a smart way, the better off that the public is going to be.
And Meg, I know we've talked about the state's dams are varied and are, you know, have very different situations, but I wonder if there is, you know, one specific challenge that kind of sticks out when it comes to dams on other waterways across the state.
I think the biggest challenge is just making sure that the dams are operated and maintained in a safe manner. And I think the state has made a lot of progress in recent years, especially with those what we call large dams that have the potential to adversely impact life and property downstream of the dam. Some of the things that have been happening is we have more frequent inspections of the dam, some of them, the majority of them done by the dam owner through the use of a professional engineer, and also inspections done by our state dam safety engineers who are stationed around the state. We've been very successful in getting a lot of the dams to do what we call a dam failure analysis. That it's a hydraulic study that shows if the dam were to fail during a large flood, what would be impacted downstream. We also have many of the owners, or a greater majority of the owners, have completed what we call emergency action plans, which define if the dam was in trouble, who should be notified, how the response to the potential failure would be handled by the owner and by local emergency responders, and also at the state level. Good majority of the dammed owners have also completed inspection, operation, and maintenance manuals, and these are the owner's guidebook to what they should be doing to operate the dam in a safe manner, inspect it, and how to identify maintenance problems and keep on top of it. We can fortunately help some of our dam owners, the municipally owned dams, through a grant program that provides funding if problems have been identified at the dam. This is a competitive program that's been funded on a biannual basis for the last 8 years. And so we can usually only help about 20 dams a year or through the biennium, but we have made significant progress on a lot of the municipally owned dams. We also have a grant program that can help private dam owners. or really any dam owner in the state who finds that either they no longer want to own the dam or they can't afford to own the dam, and that is a program that helps fund the removal of the dams.
We've been talking with Meg Galloway, Chief of Dam Safety and Floodplain Section of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Kirsten Mickelson, Ecosystem and Navigation Program Director for the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association, about locks and dams on the Mississippi River and dams on other waterways throughout the state. Today is the sixth show in our monthly series on the state of regional infrastructure. Each month, we hope to explore challenges and issues facing a different public system in Western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.